well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Boy, a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Second Amendment. The DOJ filing a new lawsuit on Monday afternoon against Montgomery County, Maryland, challenging the a number of the sensitive places in place in Montgomery County. That would include parks, libraries, multi-purpose exhibition facilities, recreational centers, churches, as well as the 100-yard buffer zone around each and every one of these locations where lawful carry is also prohibited. As the DOJ noted in its lawsuit, about a quarter of the county is covered just without even including the 100-yard buffer zones, right? And if you think about this, you know, obviously I live in a pretty rural county. Most of that land area is not occupied and not really visited by humans. Montgomery County is way more populated, but there are still parts of the county where, you know, people just simply don't go, right? So the parts of the county that people actually frequent, the DOJ alleges the vast majority of that space is actually off limits to lawful carry. This is the first time that the DOJ has gotten involved in a sensitive places argument, so I think it is pretty important and another historic first for the DOJ. Another big piece of news from the DOJ is that they have added another attorney to the Second Amendment section. You know, Barry Arrington is the acting head of the Second Amendment section. He's done a lot of work with National Association for Gun Rights, Rocky Mountain Gun Owners. Stephen Stambouli, also now working for the DOJ, he has done a lot of work with Gun Owners of America in the past. I wrote about this at Bearing Arms yesterday. Stephen has done, has been involved in a number of cases that are challenges to various aspects of the NFA. So it's interesting that he is now working for the DOJ, which has been defending the NFA. Now, it's not the Civil Rights Division or the Second Amendment section that is defending the NFA in these lawsuits. It is the DOJ's civil section, which is not the same as the civil rights section or the Civil Rights Division. So I don't think that Stephen Stambouli is going to be involved in the defense of the NFA, but maybe he can, you know, talk amongst the attorneys and quietly get the DOJ to shift its position. I doubt that's going to happen, but it is great to have another experienced Second Amendment litigator on staff at DOJ. And again, they're just doing some really good work. Wish that they were more willing to take on federal gun laws, but they at least are being very, very active going after state and local laws, including, again, the sensitive spaces there in Montgomery County, Maryland. Obviously, the big news, though, is still the shooting in Twin Falls, Idaho over the weekend. The off-duty police officer, who I don't believe has been named yet, as well as the armed citizen who has been named, who responded and reacted to this shooting by running towards the danger. We talked about this in the reaction from gun control activists, including the non-reaction. The very careful, let's not talk about this, from the gun control crowd. I want to welcome to the program today, though, Rob Chadwick from USCCA. We were able to speak yesterday afternoon about the training aspect of this situation, right? The armed citizen question apparently has been trained on a regular basis out in the desert for the past few years, inspired by another shooting in Boise, Idaho, back in, I believe, 2021. And this individual, you know, is a full-time caregiver to his brother who's in a wheelchair. And he thought to himself, you know, if we're around and there's a shooting, I mean, there's no softer target than somebody in a wheelchair. And that was kind of what spurred him on to start taking his safety, his brother's safety, more seriously and started training with a firearm. And I think that that training matters. I mean, he talked about how it was essentially instinct or maybe muscle memory. When he heard the sound of gunfire, he just immediately fell back on his training. And that's pretty important. You know, we cover armed citizen stories on this program. We had one, I think it was last week, maybe the week before last, woman had never pulled the trigger before. Had never fired a gun. But she used it to act in self-defense. And those stories happen. And as Rob and I talk, neither one of us are big fans of training mandates. But we're both big fans of training in general. Take a look and a listen. Rob, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to talk with you, sir.
Cam, thanks for having me. I appreciate what you do. Love the program.
I appreciate that very much. And I really appreciate what you do as well. You know, we unfortunately had this shooting in Twin Falls, Idaho over the weekend at the In-N-Out Burger. You had three people killed, seven injured. I think at last report, two of those injured still in the hospital. Five of those injuries appear not to be life-threatening. And police are praising the actions of two individuals who were there on scene. One of them, an off-duty police officer, I don't know that his name has been released. The other individual, a guy named Jordan Salinas, who was apparently on his way to a rural part of the state with his girlfriend. They were going to stop and have lunch, and he got out of the car, and he saw folks running. He heard the pop, 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 and he immediately drew his firearm and ran towards the danger. You know, Rob, it seems to me, I wrote a piece on Monday talking about the fact that gun control advocates are basically ignoring the armed citizen aspect of this story. And I think that they have to, right? Because we're told all the time, I mean, come on, the odds of an armed citizen being around when something like this happens, I mean, it's slim to none. You're going to put yourself in danger. Police might mistake you for the shooter, right? They have all these reasons. In fact, I saw somebody over the weekend arguing that, well, you know, you don't know where that bullet goes if it doesn't hit your target. I mean, that's true for uniformed police officers too, right? Is the assumption then that we shouldn't have any armed response for this? What are your big takeaways from what you've seen about this, this incident in Twin Falls over the weekend?
I appreciate that, Cam. And I'll start, you know, for those of your audience that may not be familiar with me, Rob Chadwick with the USCCA, and I retired from the FBI, where I had the great privilege of running the FBI's active shooter response training program nationally and internationally for several years. So I do have considerable amount of background, especially in the response training for these events, and studied them, unfortunately, for decades, right? I was a school resource officer at the very beginning of my career back in the 90s when Columbine happened. That was one year, toughest year of my 30-year career in law enforcement. But since Columbine, I've been studying these events, you know, pretty intensely. And unfortunately, we're seeing, as you are well aware, we're heading in the wrong direction in the number, you know, the frequency and the lethality of these attacks. The FBI just published, it was not lost on me that the day before this attack, the FBI had released its annual report on active shooter incidents, the data coming from 2025. And what we saw there was a drastic jump in the number of attacks and the number of people killed in those attacks from 2024 to 2025. And so, you know, my immediate takeaway was, thank goodness for stout-hearted armed citizens, both the off-duty police officer, who is a citizen, right? This is an off-duty. I don't know the details of this person, if they were with their family, if they were just, you know, working off-duty. I don't know the details there. But you know, suffice to say, off duty. So they're a private citizen at that point. And this hero, right, that was caught on video and you know, looked like he knew what he was doing. He had a pretty impressive setup, so to speak. That's a heck of an everyday carry, if that's what it was. But either way, you had two people risk, as you just mentioned, run towards the sound of gunfire when the natural reaction is to run away. And that is the correct reaction for most of us. But I will say, you know, to your earlier point about why isn't this getting much of a narrative? Because it counters the narrative. No one wants to hear about a good guy with a gun. Whether or not either one of these good guys actually took the life of this shooter, that is indisputable that they saved lives by their actions, right? They interrupted this guy's OODA loop, the observe, orient, decide, and act. He was not expecting armed response from an In-N-Out Burger right? And it certainly wasn't expecting it from multiple directions. So there's no question this altered his plan to kill as many people as possible is what it looked like. Mm-hmm. And so I say, thank goodness for not only citizens like that, but of course our constitutionally guaranteed right to carry that one tool in a situation like that, that is capable of defending yourself and your family in a random act of violence. Again, I can't stress this enough, that are happening more and more frequently in the United States over the last 25 years.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. I mean, Jordan Salinas talked with the Idaho Statesman, I guess on Sunday, and, you know, they asked him, why were you carrying a gun? And he said, you know, there was a shooting in 2021 at the Boise Town Center. He apparently is a full-time caregiver to his brother who was bound in, you know, he's stuck in a wheelchair. And he said, you know, he had this realization that these killers look for soft targets. And he said, well, who can be a softer target than a guy in a wheelchair and the person standing right next to him? And so he said he started training on a weekly basis and, you know, I guess has kept this up right over the past 4 or 5 years. It strikes me that, you know, again, here's somebody who takes training seriously, who is, you know, thinking about this very scenario, right? I'm in public. All of a sudden, somebody is there trying to take as many lives as possible. What do I do? And has, you know, again, sort of prepared himself, not just physically, but mentally for that moment. He talked about when he got out of the car and he heard shot fired, he said it was like mechanical, right? He said, I don't remember much. I just, you know, I ran towards there. He said, I remember my girlfriend yelling my name, but it was almost like his muscle memory kicked in.
Yeah.
And, you know, this guy's not a superhero, right? He's not a, as far as I know, he's not a veteran. He's not a, you know, trained sniper. Mm-hmm. He's just a gun owner who takes his training seriously and who has thought about this. And it seems to me like that's one of the reasons why, again, the gun control lobby can't highlight this guy, because this guy, every one of us has the ability to do exactly what he did if we take our training seriously, if we take that responsibility to carry seriously.
Yeah. Well, so you hit on some great points there. And, you know, I'll stay right up front. There is no provision or caveat in the Constitution requiring someone to get training to bear arms. Mm-hmm. You know, I recognize that. However, that also, right, the people that say, I don't need any training, I have a right to do it. Yes, you do. But when you do that, when you disregard the training, when you're not truly prepared to handle this very difficult, you know, weapon, and it's a very difficult thing to do, I can assure you, you give fuel to the other side, right? Oh, these are yahoos. They're not taking it seriously. They're not, you know, it just gives more credence to their argument that these weapons should be taken away. Again, I thank God literally every single day for men and women like this person, Mr. Salinas. And I go back. So I had the great opportunity a couple months ago, actually coming up on a year ago, up in Wayne, Michigan, the church shooting where a group of armed, you know, security team members, to your point, not police officers, not former military of any, but they took the decision with a great weight and responsibility. They went to training for well over a decade, took it very seriously. And, you know, they had someone show up at their church on the day that vacation Bible school had ended. So the church was packed with kids and women and you know, innocents that were listening to this incredible, you know, get together. And all of a sudden you hear this automatic gunfire rip from the background. It was played on national news. Well, thank God for the brave men who were on that security team who had trained and responded by, you know, moving to the sound of gunfire, understanding what was happening, gauging this. They were able to incapacitate this person before they could ever get to the sanctuary that was packed with innocent people, you know, avoiding what could have been an unimaginable slaughter. Now, did that story get a lot of coverage? Absolutely not. right? it went counter to, but I had the great privilege and honor of sitting down with those men a week later and talking. One was still in bandages from being shot. And I asked him, I said, what went through your mind? How did they, he said, well, I just fell back on my training. They had actually just been, believe it or not, that team had just been to, and this is, you know, as a trainer, this makes your just heart happy. They had just been to a training course that I had helped design, Securing Houses of Worship. USCCA puts those on. Just a refresher the Thursday before this Sunday morning attack. And so it was fresh in their mind. They had thought about it. They had taken it very seriously, and they acted appropriately, decisively, and saved, again, untold number of lives. And so I believe absolutely that people who have the conviction and the courage and the discipline to remain proficient with that firearm, they are, believe me, they are society's greatest protectors, because coming from law enforcement, did 30 years, I was a police officer, and then I was an FBI agent, I saw firsthand the disastrous effects that the defund the police movement has had on our first responders. Law enforcement response times are more than doubled across the country. You cannot just assume that dialing 911, the police are going to be there instantly. Yes, they're coming. It's taking them twice as long to get there as it used to just a few years ago. And so we saw how fast these things can develop. And if you don't have a plan to protect yourself or the means to protect yourself, you may be in big trouble.
Yeah. You know, and you know, I'm glad you talk about and you recognize the Constitution does not have a training mandate attached to the right to keep and bear arms. Right. And, you know, I was talking about this on Monday's Cam and Company. I suspect, I mean, it's my belief that the training mandates that the gun control advocates want to see, it's not because they actually believe in or even support the idea of firearms training, right? I think they view that training mandate as a barrier to entry.
Yeah.
What can we do to make it more difficult for people to exercise their right to keep and bear arms? Of course, they wouldn't put it in terms of the right, right? But what can we do to make it more difficult for people to own and carry a gun? Well, let's require 16 hours of training. Let's make them, you know, give up an entire weekend. Let's charge $500. You know, it's my opinion that if Jordan Salinas had been profiled this week, not because he was able to help stop a mass shooting, but just because the Idaho Statesman thought, wow, it's really interesting that this guy's been, you know, going out to the desert every weekend and training, the gun control lobby would have called him an ammosexual. They would have called him a gun nut. They would have said, why is this dude obsessed with guns, right? They would have ridiculed him for his training. You know, and so I think it's really important that we think about training not, again, as some sort of, you know, box to check, but again, as it's something that is a regular part of gun ownership, right? And you talk about that proficiency, the individuals who you interviewed in Wayne, Michigan, who, again, they just reacted the way that they have been taught. It came naturally to them. It wasn't instinct. It was their training in action, right?
No question.
You know, and do you see, and you talk about that FBI report, I have not had a chance to look at this. And it's interesting because violent crime is down overall. Homicides are at, what, a 66-year low at the very least, maybe even more than that. But if the FBI says we're seeing more of these active shooter incidents, that's, to me, really interesting. What is your advice when it comes to people who do want to take their ability to protect themselves, their families, maybe even strangers, more seriously than they've taken it in the past? You know, do you have to spend 8 hours a day training, or even an hour a day training? Do you have to go to the range, you know, every week? What can the average person do to become comfortable and proficient with that firearm, so that, again, if the unthinkable happens where they are, they don't freeze up, but they are in a position where they can help save lives?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And you're, you know, the firearms training is expensive and it's time consuming, right? It's not everyone has a range in their backyard and go out and plank. Most people don't. And so I fully reckon I don't. I've got to drive miles to the range. But I can tell you, I spent most of my career in law enforcement training and saw just how fast those skills and that proficiency wanes for police officers. There's a real misconception out there that, you know, the police are almost monolithic. They have this great training, all of them do. And they're, you know, the TD would have you believe they're great with their guns, right? One shot type of thing. The reality is the police in law enforcement shooting, right? Adversarial law enforcement shooting. The FBI has kept this record and statistically kept this record for 80 plus years now. So this is solid track record and it hasn't gotten any better. For the last 80 plus years in a law enforcement shooting, which is averaged 7 to 10 feet, so pretty darn close, a law enforcement officer engaged in an adversarial gunfight will miss 70 to 80% of the rounds they fire in that engagement. So 7 or 8 of those bullets are going into something or someone other than a intended target. That's a police officer who, at a minimum, has annual training. The FBI, we had quarterly training. So we were very blessed with a large budget. Every FBI agent had quarterly training. Every SWAT officer had monthly training. And yet, you know, they were far from flawless, right? I would see FBI agents, you know, routinely fail our qualification. And that's a static piece of paper that's, you know, not offering any resistance or any harm to you and not moving. And so I would propose that most people aren't nearly as proficient with their, especially a handgun, as most, you know, think they would be. So, you know, there are a couple of tools though. Most of it comes down to, right, trigger control, sight alignment, right, understanding. I'm a huge proponent. A friend of mine, started SIRT, CERT pistols, right? The laser reset, and they just came out with, this is a resetting trigger device. Just a little, I call it my firearms fidget spinner, right? and what it does, you can swap this thing out, the innards, and it basically changes the sensitivity and it forces you to pull direct. I just missed it. And so I have to now manually reset the thing, right? And then it helps you pull that trigger straight to the rear. That is one of the most common areas of causing misses. And so something like this, a pretty cheap little piece of plastic that I literally keep on my desk. And as I'm doing podcasts or as I'm doing an interview or something like that, I'm just getting trigger pulls in, right? Straight to the rear, straight to the rear, straight to the rear. And then if it's not straight to the rear, I have to reset it. Super simple, little, and I'm not trying to sell you one of these things, but little dry fire. I can't overestimate or emphasize how important dry fire pistol work is. Drawing from your concealment holster, drawing from concealment, clearing your garment, understanding that draw stroke is so different than going to the range with it on your hip and you're in your t-shirt and your tactical pants. That's great. You're never, almost never going to have that sort of carry. Mm-hmm. I tend to carry appendix, right? I've got a Glock 43X. That's what I was trained on with the FBI as our backup pistol. And so that's what I carry. I'm not endorsing that. It's just, I have the most rounds on that. That's why I carry it. I have that many repetitions. I feel very comfortable. I know it's going to go bang when I need it to go bang. And so that's what I carry. For people out there who have this fantasy that they're going to, you know, buy a gun, go to the range once or twice, shoot it, and then they'll rise to the occasion. They're going to bet their life, right, on something they've only done once or twice. That's a fool's recipe, right? I'm not saying you got to go every week, but you should go once a month, once a quarter at minimum, get at least a box of ammo, usually 50 pounds, and not just pulling the trigger. You can get some real good practice out of, you know, some dummy rounds or, you know, have a purpose behind your training. And then in the meantime, all these dry fire practices, invaluable. I have seen myself just with a little, you know, thing, is such an improvement in my performance. Just that trigger control. Yeah. Switch hands. Never know when you're going to have an injured hand. So I am a big fan of, you know, laser training. Also, in your mind, you know, familiarize yourself. Read these stories. Put yourself in the shoes of what just happened with Mr. Salinas. What would you do? Because when I was in charge of training at the FBI at Quantico, one of the things I would emphasize with our students is, listen, your body cannot go where your mind has not already been. Just like professional sports athletes, they visualize success hundreds of times before they ever do the play. Visualize in your mind, what am I going to do? What is the rough general plan of how I would react in a given situation?
Yeah.
Hopefully, right, it is get yourself and your family to safety. That should be your priority, all right? I applaud someone who goes into a situation like Mr. Salinas did. However, you also have to, and I'm not criticizing in any way, but I want people to think about this. Imagine how confusing that situation was. Let's say you're a law enforcement officer pulling up on scene and you see Mr. Salinas with a cowboy hat and civilian clothes and he's plinking away. There's a real high likelihood that he's getting shot. A good guy is going to get shot because of the confusion. You have to manage that expectation too.
Well, yeah, right? To Salinas'
off-duty police
point. Yeah, I mean, he said as soon as he saw law enforcement coming in, he stopped. He said, my job here is done, I think is the way he put it, right? So he was thinking about those things.
He had clearly thought about it, right? And that's what you have to do. You have to rehearse it and you have to be ready to go and committed. And understand where your boundaries are, where your physical capabilities will let you go.
Yeah. Well, Rob, again, man, I really appreciate the conversation. It's great having you on the program. I hope we can do this again in the future. And, you know, if folks want more information, obviously, about what USCCA is doing, the training that they offer, what's the best place to find that?
USCCA.com is the best place to start. Yeah, they've got a landing site there. You know, houses of worship. So it's slash worship if you have a worship team, security kind of stuff. But USCCA.com is really the flagship.
Awesome. Rob, thanks so much, man. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Cam. Take care.
My thanks again to Rob for joining us on the program. Looking forward to talking with him again in the future. Before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. That's why in modern rugged leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, tell a story all its own. Every stitch, every buckle, every strap, reflecting timeless craftsmanship. And it's backed by a lifetime warranty, because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, modern rugged leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern rugged leather, modern style, timeless durability, backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. If you go to modernrugged.com right now, you can enter in your email. You'll be among the first to know when the Modern Rugged rebrand officially launches. They're going to have all kinds of new products. Really looking forward to that. And again, you can sign up at modernrugged.com. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Northern Virginia, Loudoun County. I'm not sure if this is a true recidivist report, but it is one of those you got to be kidding me sentences. Suspect in Sterling armed robbery pleads guilty to lower charges. Loudoun County, by the way, when I first moved to Virginia 20 years ago, Loudoun County was, I mean, it wasn't a ruby red county, but it wasn't the deep blue county that it is today. And you've got these progressive prosecutors that I think are just fine with plea deals like this. So this robbery happened back on June the 30th, just a couple weeks ago. The victim was robbed at gunpoint of $640 in cash, as well as two designer bags, according to court filings. An 18-year-old named Patrick Marco Tamiklo was arrested and charged with two counts of armed robbery, one count of assault and battery, and three counts of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. There's also a 15-year-old who was arrested in this case. Court filings say that he's the one who actually pressed a pistol against the victim's chest, threatened him and his girlfriend during the robbery. A third person, a juvenile, is believed to have driven a getaway car But at this point, it's not clear whether they've been identified or arrested. So even before, even while there might be an outstanding suspect, at a hearing on Monday in the Loudoun County Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court, which I'm confused as to why an 18-year-old was basically in juvenile court for this. He's an adult. He's 18. But anyway, Tamiklo was in the Loudoun County Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court before Judge Pamela Brooks. The members of his family were there as Tamiklo pleaded guilty to the assault and battery charge, as well as one of the child delinquency charges. The armed robbery charge was amended to larceny from a person of $5 or less. Keep in mind, the victim here was robbed of $640 in cash, but Tamiklo able to plead guilty to robbing somebody of less than $5. The second robbery charge, the remaining two child delinquency charges were dropped by prosecutors in exchange for the guilty pleas. Tamiklo was sentenced to 3 years in prison and then had the entirety of that sentence suspended except for 1 month. Now, it has been a little more than a month since this armed robbery took place, and my guess is that this armed robbery, Tamiklo was probably arrested, spent the past couple of weeks maybe in detention, and is getting off with nothing more than time served. He's also placed on supervised probation for a year. Woohoo! How about that? Loudonnow.com says the juvenile suspect also had a hearing on Monday, but that proceeding was closed to the public because the suspect is a minor. If Tamiklo is getting a deal like this, you can rest assured that the juvenile is getting a pretty sweet deal as well. One that has already been offered to him or one that will be coming in the very near future. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Indiana, where a homeowner in Granger reported shooting an intruder during an early morning home invasion. Don't have a ton of details. This was, just before 2 o'clock Monday morning in Granger, Indiana. St. Joseph County Police called to a home after the homeowner called 911 and reported that somebody had broken into the home and had been shot. Police say at least one shot was fired during the incident, but when officers arrived, the person who was reportedly shot was no longer at the scene. As of last report, News Talk WOWO reports that investigators are working to determine the circumstances surrounding the reported break-in, including what led to the homeowner firing the weapon. I'm guessing because somebody broke into his house and he was in fear for his life. That's just me. Authorities have also not released any information about the identity or the condition of the person who was shot. If they've not been taken into custody, of course, they would have no idea what that identity or condition would be. So we will continue to keep our eyes on this story and bring you any more details as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan who aided a police officer in pulling a man from a burning car following a very severe crash. This was in Michigan, Calhoun County, Michigan. According to the Michigan State Police, there was a 15-year-old unlicensed driver behind the wheel of a Ford Explorer, blew through a stoplight at an intersection on Friday, and hit the 42-year-old driver who had the right-of-way. Both of the cars go off the road. The man's Kia Soul caught fire. Michigan State Trooper Martha Beal got to the scene just after 12:30 in the morning. She found the Kia Soul engulfed in flames. And she said, "My first thought was that someone's in that vehicle. Someone has to be in that vehicle that I have to get them out." She found the 42-year-old victim unconscious inside the car. But she struggled to get him out. And she said, "As I dropped his leg, this random person grabbed his leg without even thinking and helped me drag him back to the road." She said, "I have no idea who he was, but that was a man of courage right there to step up and just act." And she said, "I would like to shake the man's hand." The 42-year-old taken to a local hospital with what's described as serious head injuries and internal damage at last report in critical condition. And again, fighting for his life at this point. Investigators say the 15-year-old had taken his dad's car, had a group of his buddies in the vehicle as well, when he again blew through that traffic light and T-boned the Kia Soul. Three of the passengers in the Ford Explorer were also taken to the hospital with injuries ranging from broken legs and ankles to fractured pelvic bones. Martha Beale, the state trooper, said, "I just think it's important for teenagers to remember that if you don't have a driver's license, you shouldn't be in anybody's vehicle driving." She said, "I understand that kids do dumb things. However, this is a little bit beyond that, especially when one man's fighting for his life." According to local news reports, troopers do not believe that alcohol was a factor in the crash, but they say marijuana use is suspected. A blood draw was conducted on the 15-year-old unlicensed driver, and state police waiting for results before submitting charges to the prosecutor's office. You know, I mean, I did plenty of dumb things as a 15-year-old and as a 16-year-old and 17-year-old and 18-year-old and so on and so forth. I've probably even done some dumb things on the other side of 50. But again, this is just, I mean, it's a terrible tragedy. The fact, though, that there was this Good Samaritan who just, again, kind of appeared out of nowhere and then left without saying anything to the trooper. Don't know who that person is. Kind of miraculous. But in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Anonymous stranger in Calhoun County, Michigan, we thank you for your very good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I do want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Hey, and on Wednesdays, I do my weekly live chat with Hot Air's Ed Morrissey and our VIP Gold and Platinum members. Happens every Wednesday, 1:30 in the afternoon. It is a fantastic hour, sometimes a little bit more than an hour. Once a month, we also do an after party where we get together in the evenings and just hang out and chat. It is a lot of fun. I would love for you to be a part of it. It's basically, we talk about whatever you want to talk about. Some days it is very two-way centric. Other days, not so much, more news of the day. Some days we get off on a tangent about old movies or, music or whatever. But again, it's entirely led by our VIP Gold and Platinum members. And I would love for you to be a part of it. All you have to do is go to bearingarms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT. And you can take 60% off your membership, whether it is a VIP membership, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum. Obviously, as you go up in tier, the benefits accrue. But no matter what tier you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing here at Bearing Arms, and that really does matter. It truly does make a difference, so thank you for that. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. I've got a prior commitment this evening, so I will not be on Newsmax with my buddy Carl Higbee, but we'll pick that up again next week. And I'll see you back here again tomorrow for another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.